It's the California Wine Country Podcast with Steve Jackson and Dan Berger. We taste, we laugh, we learn.
Pete Fopiano sitting in for Steve Jackson, California Wine Country with Dan Berger. And Dan, welcome. Today our featured winery is going to be Bannister Wines, so I'm going to turn it over to you.
This is really an unbelievable story, and it's a story that goes back more than 30 years. For me, I met Marty Bannister a long, long time ago when she was involved in setting up Vinquiry, I guess it was called, in Healdsburg with Marianne Graff. And they ran this fabulous lab operation. And for years would go by, and you'd see these fabulous wines that were under the radar. And pretty soon the radar was off. And here with us today is Brooke Bannister, who is Marty's son. And just tell us a little bit about the history of the winery, because this is just an incredible story.
Thanks for having me. So, yeah, my mom started Vinquiry in 1979 and then got interested in making wine and started our little family label, which is Bannister. And her first vintage was 1989. And she did that until 2006 when she had to retire kind of unexpectedly. I moved back here in 2012 and kind of took her protocol and things she'd taught me and started making the wines again. So 13 was our first vintage after taking 7 years kind of off out of the market, not making any wines at all.
That's a tough hiatus for any brand, and in particular because you're focused on – your mom was such a stylist when it came to focusing on acidity and balance and structure, and those wines were really great with food. And those are not the flashiest of the wines – during that earlier era, and by missing out on some of the vintages that followed, six was a good vintage for what could have been done with the Bannister brand, but you didn't make any wine that year.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, there was seven where you could have benefited a little bit from the richer style. Eight was the tough one, which you missed out on that one. Good thing you missed on eight, because that wasn't a great vintage to begin with. But 10, 11, think about what opportunities your brand would have had in 10 and 11, the two cool years.
Yeah, but at the same time, I'm happy just that we have our little family brand going again. So you can't really look back. You know, as far as we knew, maybe we were never going to make wine again. So as it happened, I was able to come back here and do that. So
which is the first white wine you want to serve?
We'll start with the Chardonnay.
Let's do that.
Okay. It's a 2017 from Stuhlmiller in Alexander Valley.
While you're getting that bottle, let me say a couple of additional things. First of all, your mom was really one of the pioneers of the cooler climate style wines. And back in the 80s, this was not necessarily the best way to go for getting your brand recognized, because those wines were – back in those days, people were looking for richness and boldness and higher impact wines, and that was not the style she pioneered.
Right. Well, I think the most wine she ever made in a vintage was 1,500 cases. So when you're that small, I think you know that you're not going to have to worry as much about making something that has a national appeal as much as just making the kind of wine you want to make, and it'll find its audience, even if it's not necessarily the trend right at the moment. That's the hottest thing going.
So this, tell us a little bit about the Chardonnay before you grab the bottle.
Okay, we've been working with the Stuhlmiller fruit since 2014. It's a really interesting vineyard because it was had a lot of old vines, kind of got abandoned in the 1980s, some died. When the Stuhlmillers got it, they replanted. So it's got this kind of interesting interplanting of really old vines and then some younger vines. It's right next to the river, so it's got a really extreme kind of diurnal shift with the nighttime low and the daytime high in temperature. That really drives a lot of complexity into the wine, a lot of orchard fruit characteristics, citrus characteristics. We do a champagne pressing on it, so it's kind of the lightest possible pressing you could do. I think that is the most critical thing in Chardonnay is the pressing. So getting this really delicate pressure on the grape.
Let's try that wine.
Okay, let's do it.
Interestingly, Chardonnay has gone through some transitional periods during the period where you weren't making wine. So now we're back to a more delicate style, and this is just a really good opportunity to see how that fruit works. This is, I love the color of this. You use any barrels at all?
Yeah, just one new oak barrel, though, so we're talking 15% new oak.
Stylish, bright, citrusy, just gorgeous wine. Well, that's exactly what I would have expected out of the brand, and this is really, what's the appellation on that?
It's Alexander Valley.
It's got to be one of the cooler regions of Alexander Valley.
Yeah, it is definitely the coolest. Because you've actually left the valley floor, it's where the hills are kind of pinching down to the river as it's making that turn towards Healdsburg. So you've got a different soil type down there. You've got cooler nights along the river. And we do this 11 months on the lees, so that really helps build a lot of the richness into it as well without using new oak.
It doesn't need much oak because it's got such beautiful, bright, citrusy fruit. If somebody asked me where this was from, I would guess it would be maybe Dry Creek or something cooler than even that, because this is almost like a Russian River kind of an aromatic.
Yeah.
It's really, really delightful wine.
Yeah, and this, I think we, recognize in the Stuhlmilder wines the potential there, so it's been cool to add another really good Chardonnay out of that vineyard.
Tell me how you set your style for this wine. Was your mom involved in helping you with coming up with a style point that helped make this?
Yeah, completely. And honestly, I'm really trying to just carry on, the work that she did, the knowledge that she built. I wanted to kind of take her protocol and keep making wines in that style. So she was involved in finding the vineyards that we used, and I really just kind of pick up her protocol at the winery when I'm doing the winemaking and kind of think about what she'd be doing.
I like the presence of the wine because it's easy to drink it, but after you had it in the mouth for a quick second or two, you realize the acidity is what's carrying this wine, and that's why you need some food with it.
Mm-hmm.
This would be great with some delicate seafood.
Yeah, for sure. And like you said before about our wines being food friendly, that's still the goal, is to make food friendly wines.
Well, there's very little like this in the market today. From larger producers. This is really a boutique kind of a style. Was it difficult to get back into the retail business, or do you still try to sell some direct to consumers?
Well, it was difficult to get into the retail business in the sense that I had never been involved on the business side of the wine business. I'd helped my mom with winemaking and done a lot of the labor, hauled grapes, everything you could think of, but not the business side. And so I really had no idea what the market was like out there for selling. So that was kind of a rude awakening, an interesting experience. It kind of took me a little while. And, changing careers, learning a new profession, that's been interesting for sure. But
what did you do prior to this?
I had a furniture making business in Oakland.
That's kind of an that is kind of an interesting career move, I have to say.
Well, I just kind of felt like I had this little opening where I could restart our family business, and I really did not want to see my mom's work disappear. And I just thought, I'll try this for a little while, and maybe I'll get to a point where I can kind of do both things. So here we are, 13 to 2019, and it's headed in the right direction. Still trying to figure it out as far as the market goes.
Well, I've always been, appreciative and very, very, Sonoma County's blessed, I think, to have a lot of the small individual family wineries, that started up maybe with the grandparents and went on to the parents, the kids, and so forth. And I always appreciate the small wineries as opposed to the large corporate-owned wineries. And there's not as many of those as there used to be, unfortunately.
Maybe not. Again, I'm new to the market myself, just seeing what's going on out there. There's certainly a lot more wine being made now than there was before. So that's depending on who's making it all, I'm not sure. But the market's definitely saturated.
It's much more saturated than it used to be. I remember when I was a kid how many wineries there were. Now you've got that many within a square mile or so.
Right.
Well, I think the market has changed a little bit as well. I think that we're back to a little bit more perspective. There was a period of time, probably during that period when you weren't even making wine, that styles got bigger and richer, people looking for more boldness. That's fine for a short period of time, but eventually it comes back to the fact that food is part of the daily experience. And if you're going to have wine every day, it's going to be with food. And that's why people were really emphasizing that as the 2014-15 wines started being made. We're starting to see, I think 12 helped us, or certainly 10 and 11 were big advance warning for people because they were cool climates. The wines, everybody said, well, gee, they're tough vintages, but the wines sold. So once the 10s and 11s started to sell, people said, well, gee, maybe we could do that in 12 and 13 as well. And so we're starting to begin to see a little bit of rebirth of the food style of wine, which is really helpful.
Mm-hmm.
How many cases of the Chardonnay did you make?
We do about 200 cases of that every vintage.
And what is the what's the price on that?
It retails for $32.
That's a very, very fair price considering the quality. This is really high quality stuff. I guess the Stuhlmuller fruit is really what carries this wine.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah. And frankly, I think my mom's protocol is, like, she just came up with a great protocol for doing Chardonnay.
Well, the color is bright. I mean, it's not, there's no indication that this spent any excessive time in barrels. And that was one of the secrets, getting it out of the barrel soon enough so that you still have plenty of this fruit.
Right, but also there's something about keeping it on the lees that really gives it a lot of body and mouthfeel and gives it a nice ageability in the bottle, so where it's still fresh. Like we just released the 17 because it has so much structure that it actually needed a little more time than your typical Chardonnay does.
You sure got the terminology down. You really were reared in the right family.
I hope so. I mean, there's a lot of things I still feel like I'm learning when it comes to this, but...
Well, your background came to the fore. So, Dan, we're going to turn it back over to you and give us your thoughts on this Pinot Noir that Brooke has just poured.
There are two Pinot Noirs in the Bannister portfolio, one of which is a cooler. I guess they're both cool climate pretty mm-hmm. much, but yeah. This one is in particular. Now, this is Bruce Campbell's old property, or is this a different Campbell?
Different Campbell.
Okay. This is Campbell Ranch up in Annapolis. This is way out there, and it's up near Mendocino County, just south of the Mendocino County line. This is really a cool region, lots of marine influence. Years ago, you couldn't ripen this fruit every year. There'd be 2 or 3 years out of 10 that you'd have a struggle to just get these things ripe. Today, we're getting it all ripe, but there's always a question as to how much of this fruit you can use. Can you use every grape, or do you have to be careful about what you're putting in the hopper?
I put everything in. I don't do any sorting. I just think, if you have a really good farmer, which this vineyard has, and it's a really good site, you just put all the fruit in there and make the wine.
Well, this one has really got that beautiful aroma of sort of wild thyme and blueberry. It's got a nice level of cherry, but it's an underripe cherry component, and it indicates that cool climate that's right off the coast. I mean, it does give you the smell is exactly what you'd get from a cooler climate. Gorgeous
right.
wine.
Thank you. And it's a 2014, so a little older vintage, but that particular climate there allows us to make really ageable, deeply structured wines that we can kind of hold on to and then release when they're a little older and have them be drinking really optimally.
The secret, I think, to this wine is that you don't smell the barrel at all. It's almost as if it wasn't aged in barrels. But there was some here because it gives it a substructure of texture that you don't otherwise get if you don't have any. And here the wine has a beautiful, beautiful balance of that beautiful fruit and then the very subtle characteristic of the oak. But it's really pretty wine. How many cases did you make of this?
I think 14 was a big crop, so we did about 300, but generally we do 200 a year out of Campbell.
And what's the retail price on this wine?
$55.
Well, this is just exactly what I was expecting it would be in terms of price point. This is just a stunning wine.
Thank you.
And deserves a lot more attention from people because this is an area of the world that is going to become very important as the years go by because as global climate change increases temperatures, this area is still going to have its marine influence.
Yeah, it is. It's above the fog line, but that Pacific air there, it just never gets real hot. And so you can hang the fruit and the sugar doesn't go up. So what we're doing is ripening all the phenolics and getting these really nicely structured wines without having to contend with high alcohols.
I think that's a secret to good Pinot Noir, is getting a cooler climate, but then being able to have a vintage like 14, which was a fairly ripe vintage, and still being able to maintain some consistency in terms of what you didn't probably pick it very high. It's probably picked at around 23-something.
I think we're 24. But, you know, the plant's holding on to a lot of acid out there, too.
Yeah,
and that really helps.
That's a pretty wine.
Thank you.
Now, I would we're almost coming up on another break, but I mean, just a real quick question. I imagine they can come to the winery and purchase this, but this is probably available also at Bottle Barn as well?
No. Most of my sales are just through our website, which is bannisterwines.com.
Interesting. Well, I encourage people to go visit and check out the website, but also encourage you to go visit Bottle Barn, too, because their selection is tremendous. And, you know, as they've come on and told us, and
it's a great wine shop.
Times, it's a wonderful shop.
My wife, Julianne, and I were out there this morning and just enjoyed ourselves going through the stacks.
A quick question for Brooke. Now, I see we've tasted a couple already. You started with the Chardonnay, one of the Pinot Noirs, and there's another Pinot Noir, and I see a bottle of Zinfandel. Are these just those the only vintages that you produce?
We also do a really small production rosé and a really small production orange Riesling.
Hmm.
Riesling is what's actually... Well, how I work is behind-the-scenes stuff nobody cares about. I was literally scrolling through the Internet seeing what Rieslings I could find in Sonoma County just because I'm desperate for good Riesling. And I discovered that you had a Riesling. As soon as I saw that, it's time for a phone call.
Yeah, that was cool. We connected. And actually, the 18 Riesling is the first one we've done. So it's something we just added
looking
to the portfolio.
Forward to it. If I had my business card, you'd see that it says Riesling on it. So this is a really fabulous, this Green Valley 2015 Pinot Noir you have that we've got in our glasses here. This is an interesting, explain a little bit about why the wine is so as concentrated as it is. It's not your style typically.
No, and really, we made the wine the same in 15 as we do other years, but the crop in 15 was really unique. There was a lot of shock to the fruit set in May of that year, and it caused the berries to not develop very large size. They ripened phenolically, so they were really nice mature in a winemaking sense, but they were tiny, and so they had very little juice in them. And so all this extra skin gave us tons of extra color, lots of extra tannins. And so the 15 vintage is a real outlier in comparison to other vintages, you know, before and after that, just in how much extra color and tannin it has.
Well, I like the weight of the mouth. It almost has the weight of a medium weight Zinfandel. It's pretty hefty stuff, but the aftertaste is distinctively Pinot. And all I can think of is what this wine is going to be like in two or three more years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's got a lot of ageability with all that extra tannin.
Pretty substantial wine for an area of the world that, now, Green Valley is well known, but this area of Green Valley that you picked from is, I don't even know where it is. Why don't you explain where that is?
So just going a couple miles west on Green Valley Road to where it almost kind of ends up against the Occidental Ridge there, there's a little road called Maddox Road, and the vineyard's back in there. And it's just a field mix of Dijon clones. We do about 275 cases of that.
Lovely, lovely wine. And again, not very much of it. What's the retail on this one?
It's 40.
Well, that's a bargain. I mean, that really, seriously, with wine of this caliber, you should normally see a price tag up around close to 50 or if not higher.
Yeah, most of our Pinots are 55, 60, but I wanted to have, you know, one Pinot that was, you know, a little lower price point, accessible, and kind of worked in the wholesale market.
This will do well in places like Bottle Barn, where you have people who can explain the wines to the customer who comes in and says, tell me a little bit about the wine, because this is really a very special kind of an experience. Tell us a little bit about how your mom ended up taking a long hiatus out of the business, because this is a very interesting story.
Well, unfortunately, she got Lyme disease and probably in the late 90s, but couldn't really figure out what was going on. Wasn't diagnosed till maybe, you know, she'd felt ill for 3 or 4 years. And as time went along, she just kind of felt like she couldn't do the job of winemaking that she wanted to do, and so she decided to stop. And I wasn't living here at the time. I was in Oakland and had the business down there. So, yeah, we just kind of closed shop and didn't make any wine for 7 years. But like I was saying earlier, I really didn't want to see all the kind of work she'd put in, and, you know, all the things she'd developed over the years, because also Vinquiry made this massive contribution to American winemaking. And I at least wanted to see the family wine brand keep going.
Yeah, Vinquiry was a pioneer in so many different ways. And what your mom and the late Marianne Graff pioneered was really important for the entire industry, not just in Sonoma County, but elsewhere. And within the industry, both your mom and Marianne mm-hmm. were very, very well regarded and highly praised for all the pioneering work that they did, both technically as well as wine style-wise. And so resurrecting the business was really a kind of a heroic kind of thing to do, because there's no guarantee that when you're out of business for 7 years that people will remember your brand.
No, and they didn't. So that's been one of the extra challenges, is just clawing back into the market and, you know, finding some shelf space. But if you have a really good story, that is kind of half the battle too.
Well, I just love what you're doing with these wines. Obviously, I can see your mom's fingerprints all over this, and that's really nice, because it does have that style that we go back to from that period when she began in the business, and really making a real statement on behalf of where the fruit was grown and mm-hmm. what the grower tried to give her. She would step the old story, get good fruit and get out of the way.
Yeah, no, that's really well said. I'm glad you kind of know that about her, because that was definitely her approach.
Great stuff. I'm really impressed by this. You want to do the Zin now?
Yeah.
You should do the Zin.
Okay.
So your Zinfandel comes from a vineyard that is highly regarded, very highly regarded vineyard, but very few people know about it because it has not showed up on a lot of labels over the last several years. You're beginning to see that name. The name is Saini, and it's on the western side of,
it's on the eastern bench, Dry Creek Valley.
Eastern bench, yeah. We'll get an empty glass here for you. So tell me, why did you decide to go for the Saini fruit? I mean, you had choices elsewhere, I'm sure.
You know, there's two reasons. Well, one is that I've known Mike Saini. We're exactly the same age. I've probably known him since we were 1 or 2 years old. So I've known him all my life, grew up with him. And the other is my mom always loved the wines that were made from there. So when we kind of got things up and running again after a few vintages, in 2015 we were talking about Zin, and we decided to ask Mike if he had any available. So our first vintage out of there was 16, and it was great because he was happy to find a couple tons for us, and that worked out really well. And you're tasting the 17. So
yeah, I know. I see that.
The 16 sold really fast, and we just released the 17.
Yeah, the issue for Zinfandel lovers is vineyard designated Zinfandels should have a characteristic that you can put your fingers on and say, oh, I got that. This has got that beautiful raspberry mm-hmm. and violet component, and that is really special.
Yeah, we really try and take a little bit of the kind of Pinot Noir approach with it as well. Kind of low extraction, keep the alcohol down as much as we can, obviously.
Yeah, it's not easy to do that with some Zinfandel vineyards, because they tend to ripen unevenly, and depending on how the crew comes in, you could end up with a lot of fruit that you didn't want to have picked. They'll pick it anyway. And then you get, you know, 30 bricks in some of the fruit, and that shows up in the tank, and you suddenly turn around and say, wait a minute, where'd all that alcohol come from?
Yeah, I've heard that, and I've seen, you know, a lot of other Zinfandel projects with stuck fermentations and so on, but the Sainis are such good farmers. Like, the fruit's really even. The crop's, like, very, it's not overcropped. And the acid is amazing in that vineyard. So.
This is what this one of the secrets to this wine is how good the acid is and mm-hmm. how it's not acidic in the aftertaste. It's just perfectly balanced. You've got that beautiful mid-palate. The alcohol doesn't seem much more than about 14.3 because there's no burn here.
I know. It's funny. It's actually higher than that, but it doesn't drink boozy at all. Mm. It's really well integrated. Part of that is we do a 18-month aging on it before we bottle it, too. So that gives it kind of an extra, you know, the Pinots are maybe 12 months. The Zin gets an extra 6 months to really kind of come together.
What I'm a big fan of in Zinfandel is where you can have that raspberry, but if the aftertaste shows any prunes or raisins, the danger point then becomes, do you age the wine? My rule of thumb is if you smell prunes or raisins in the aftertaste or in the aroma of a young Zinfandel, don't age it because that's only going to get worse. There's none here. There's not a drop, not a trace. This is just perfectly balanced.
Thank you.
You got the fruit in early enough.
Yeah, I think we probably were maybe the first pick out of that vineyard, both vintages. So
love what the acid does in the mid palate here, because the first thing I thought of was, what kind of pizza am I going to put this with? This is really delicious.
So that's your recommended food with this particular Zinfandel pizza. Anything else that would go with it?
I think anything with tomato sauce would be great. You can also see it with something how about some calamari with lemon aioli?
There you go.
Where the lemon becomes your counterpoint to the acidity that's in the wine. Then you've got the oil from the calamari, which helps to balance. So you have oil, but then you've got the acidity in the wine that cuts through some of that. So you've got all these flavor profiles here, but then there's the texture that really adds to the compatibility with food. That's great. I love this stuff. This is fabulous. What is the price on this?
That is $36.
Oh, see, that's a bargain. That's ridiculous. I mean, this is a wine of this caliber should really go for the mid-40s.
You know, I agree, but the Zinfandel market is...
It's soft right
but
now,
it's
yeah.
been strong for us, but overall, a lot of Zinfandel makers are kind of having a hard time. It's one of those varietals that's kind of got to find its place in the market again.
Mm. Well, I think if you come in with a superior product, I think you're in a good position, yeah. and just certainly a superior product. Brooke Bannister has just poured a little bit of the Riesling, which is a very limited quantity of wine that he makes. And Dan, you are quite enthusiastic about this, so share your thoughts with the listeners. What do you think about it?
Not enough time left to describe it. First of all, orange wine is a distinctive style, and it's made from... fruit that has been left without protection from oxygen. So the wine then becomes oxygenated, and therefore some of the freshness and vitality of the wine is buried under oxygen. So this wine is really an orange wine made from Riesling. I've never smelled or tasted anything like this before. It is absolutely like there are plenty of wines made in the south of France and in the Jura in particular. They're called orange wine there as well. But in this case, this is like patterned after Eastern Europe. So this is really a style of wine that you don't see very much in this country at all. Some people are making orange wine. There's a couple of people. But this one is probably the best I've ever tasted because you started with Riesling from the Cole Ranch, which I argue is the best Riesling vineyard in America. And this is caliber number one. This is great stuff.
Thank you.
How many cases left?
You know, I don't know. We made 110, and I just released it. There's probably, 70 cases, something like that. So it's still available.
Sensational wine.
Thanks. And the whole thing was kind of an experiment, so I'm pleased that it turned out as well as it did.
We'll do our best to create a run on this wine.
Well, if you've never tasted orange wine before, this is one to try because it's made from the best grape you can make it from.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Well, and we're getting close to the end of our time here, but Dan, any final thoughts you want to share with us here?
Yeah, I think from a historic point of view, the Bannister brand is critical to Sonoma County's history, in particular because of what Marty and her partner did at Vinquiry, but also because these are wines that were ideal in terms of the style that was created for them. And that style has not been carried on consistently by very few, very many people over the last decades. So this brand was there at the beginning when this all started to be created and now is back. And Brooke, you've done a great job of translating what your mom wanted
Thanks.
To see.
Thank you.
And her legacy lives on, and so does she. Thank God for her being around with us, and we can take heart to the fact that Sonoma County has really been at the forefront of some of this great wine.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And, yeah, it's great for me just to have her name still be out there, because doing this is about her, not about me. So I appreciate you having me.
Next time we have a new vintage to release, let's bring her into the studio
we'll
and
do that.
Do it again.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks.
Sounds good. Well, thank you very much. As always, Dan Berger giving us his insights on wine in general and Bannister wines in specific. And Brooke, thank you for bringing in all these different varieties of wine. This is Pete Fopiano. It has been my pleasure to be sitting in here talking with all of you for sitting in for Steve Jackson.